This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. The machine recount is over, but the election rolls on. Both Palm Beach and Broward County missed the deadline to submit recount tallies. At least one of the statewide races appears all but settled, with Republican former Congressman Ron DeSantis maintaining a lead over Democratic Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum in the race for governor. Meanwhile, the Senate and Agriculture Commission races with slimmer margins headed for a hand recount, and the lawsuits continue to pile up. So what has the last couple of weeks revealed about how elections are run in Florida? How high is your confidence level in the election process, and what, if anything, needs to change? Were you one of the voters whose signature was rejected, and how are you going about trying to fix that? Are you concerned about voter fraud or aging elections infrastructure? We're at 1-866-338-5252. You can join the conversation with your questions and comments on Twitter at WMFE Orlando. And with us in the studio, 90.7's Amy Green. She's been looking into some of the many lawsuits filed by lawyers for the Scott and Nelson campaigns and other parties as well. Thank you for being here, Amy.
It's nice to talk with you.
Also joined by Katie Switalski in Broward County. She's a reporter with our sister station, WLRN, has been covering the recount down in South Florida. Katie, thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I want to start with you, Katie. You've been covering the Broward County election recount. Election supervisor Brenda Snipes was confident that their office could get the recount done by 3 p.m. yesterday. So what happened?
It was such a tragedy. So Broward started uploading all of their new machine recounts about 15 minutes before the deadline, and the upload took 17 minutes, which means that they missed the state deadline by just 2 minutes. So they had to resubmit their numbers from Saturday from their original count because the state wouldn't accept the new count.
Mm-hmm. It seems like it's cutting it a little bit close anyway, trying to start uploading 15 minutes out. I mean, that is cutting things pretty fine.
Yeah, and they were very confident. They were feeling good. They made it. And then the 2 minutes, I mean, they were really disheartened by that. Mm-hmm. And they actually started their hand recounts a little later than expected this morning as well. Huh. But that got underway about an hour ago.
So what's the prognosis for the hand recount then? Are they on track to get that done by the deadline?
They say they are right now. So today they're spending the day counting under and over votes for the U.S. Senate race. And tomorrow is going to be counting under and over votes for the Commissioner of Agriculture.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel like those of us who've been following this election intimately know what under and over votes are, but just remind our listeners what exactly we mean by an undervote or an overvote.
So when you go into the voting booth and you start to bubble in someone and then you change your mind and you bubble in someone else, you've got marks in two different bubbles, and that's called an overvote. Or if you skip a race and don't vote at all, then that's an undervote.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to 90.7's Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty, talking with Katie Switalski from WLRN. I want to hear from you as well. You can join the conversation at 1-866-338-5252. Are you concerned about what you've been hearing and seeing and reading about over the last week and a half or so? Are you confident in the elections process? Maybe your county supervisor of elections has things running smoothly, but looking at what's going on in some of these bigger counties in South Florida, what are your questions? We want to hear them. You can reach out to us on Twitter as well. We're at WMFE Orlando. Katie, you were sort of there from the get-go in Broward County when things kicked off last week. What was that scene like at the supervisor of elections at the start of this whole process?
It really changed pretty drastically. Thursday, there were no protesters. There was no security really inside. And by Friday afternoon, there were mobs of protesters that have stayed, and they've been there ever since Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely became a much more chaotic scene and a national media frenzy as, of course, camera crews after camera crews came in. And it's been much more heavily watched, I think, in the past few days. There's been less press conferences. It's pretty hard to get a question answered about process.
Mm-hmm. Is Brenda Snipes been fairly out front, sort of coming and chatting to the media, or has she been not so much on the scene?
She's been pretty closed off. She's had her attorney speak for her a few times. But again, that's a difference that we saw from last week, because Thursday she did not mind talking to us in the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
She's never been a big media fan, but it was really when the protesters and the extra scrutiny came that she kind of got a little bit more closed off as mm-hmm. time went by. And it's really interesting just that at every point of this election, this recount, things seem to be going wrong for Broward and Palm Beach County as well.
Mm-hmm. We are getting some calls coming in. I want to get to some of those in a minute, but one more question for you in the meantime here, Katie Switalski. What are you hearing, or what's your sense of what the residents of Broward County think about this whole process? Because a lot of the attention has been from the outside, whether it's media from the rest of the country or you know, even people from elsewhere in the states are looking at Broward County saying, what on earth is going on there? So what's your sense of what voters in Broward County think about this?
Yes, I think it's really undermined the process for local voters. The sort of joke in the county for a few years has been, you know, if you're voting in Broward, don't vote by mail. There's really a low confidence in voters here. And I think that's been going on for a few years after Snipes was reelected in 2016. Mm-hmm. But I think that this has just blown that up so much. And people really wonder, you know, it doesn't matter if they're on the Democratic side or the Republican side, both core groups are left at the end of the day wondering if their vote really did count.
Mm-hmm. And we should remind listeners, too, that Brenda Snipes was initially appointed by then-Governor Jeb Bush, and she's been re-elected several times since, right?
Yeah, since 2004, mm-hmm. every 4 years.
Got a call coming in here. I want to take this. This is George. George, you're on the air. What is your question?
Yeah, so what are the results in Broward County after their recount that wasn't accepted because it was 2 minutes late? What were the results?
That's a great question. Can you clear that up for us, Katie?
Yes, I can certainly try. I know the margins for governor really did not change. And the Senate race, there were more votes for Nelson. And in the race for Commissioner of Agriculture, certainly that our county helped Democrat Nikki Fried take the lead. And she's declaring victory right now, mm-hmm. even though that race still has to go to a hand recount.
And in fact, I think she was declaring victory even several days ago, right? So certainly that we've seen some of that over the last few days. Amy Green, I want to bring you into this conversation. By the way, thank you for your call, George. You can call in with your questions and comments, 1-866-338-5252. Reach out with your queries and comments on Twitter as well, at WMFE Orlando. 90.7's Amy Green, talk to us about the lawsuits. There's been a flurry of them as lawyers for both the Scott and the Nelson campaigns have sought to get leverage in this election. There's razor-thin margins in a couple of these races. What can you tell us about some of these legal battles underway?
Well, there's been a flurry of lawsuits for sure. There's been so many lawsuits that here in our newsroom we have set up this huge dry erase board where we've created a flow chart to kind of help us keep track. It's important to emphasize this is a situation in flux. Mm-hmm. Things are happening fast in this story, but I can tell you that we expect at least two hearings today in Leon County in recount litigation. The first has to do with the Nelson campaign is seeking uniformity in the recount process, and that mm-hmm. hearing is scheduled for 11:30.
And what does that mean exactly, uniformity?
I don't have the details basically, but they say that they want to make sure that you know, the recount is taking place across counties with some kind of uniformity.
Mm-hmm. Which may be quite tricky given that there are 67 counties, right?
Exactly. The other hearing we're looking forward to today in Leon County, the Nelson campaign, because of machine malfunctioning in Palm Beach County, the Nelson campaign is seeking a hand recount of all ballots in that county. Mm-hmm. And let's clarify what we're talking about here. Now that the state is going into a hand recount, we're not talking about a hand recount of all 8 million ballots that have been cast in this race. When they did the machine recount, ballots that showed undervotes or overvotes, as Katie explained, were set aside. Mm-hmm. And those are the ballots that will be counted by hand. So in Palm Beach County, there's been machine malfunctioning.
Right.
The Nelson campaign is seeking a hand recount, not just of those votes that were set aside, but all the votes.
Mm-hmm. And how many ballots are we talking about? Like the hand recount, how many ballots are in play here?
Well, attention really is focused at this point on Broward County. Mm-hmm. We know that the margin here between Senator Nelson and Governor Rick Scott is less than 13,000 votes. In Broward County, the number of votes that has been set aside for a hand recount is 23,000.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Nelson campaign is very focused on those votes in this Democratic stronghold.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are a lot of questions about what happened in Broward County. Why was there this unusual trend of undervotes in that county? There's been questions about ballot design. The Nelson campaign doesn't believe that's the reason for the undervotes. They believe, for whatever reason, those votes just weren't counted in the Senate race.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever happened, that will be revealed in this hand count as election officials go through the ballots one by one.
Mm-hmm. Katie Switalski, let me bring you back into this conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, go for it.
I really think it's really interesting what she said, because Nelson's attorneys are very focused on these votes in Broward. Every single vote that the canvassing board goes over, they're arguing, you know, one way or the other, and they are really looking at these vote by vote with a team of attorneys.
Mm-hmm. Given that is the case, Katie, and you said before that, you know, they think they're on track to get that deadline, is it going to take a little bit longer if they are going over these votes with such scrutiny?
Yes, I think so, because at least Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, when they were still doing the initial counts, arguments between attorneys really slowed the canvassing board down, and they had to answer questions and stop and take so much more time for each individual vote.
Do you get the sense that there is a lot of just kind of casual bystander interest there, or are most of the people who are watching things either lawyers or people who are somehow connected to the campaign or part of the media? Like, are you getting just many people sort of walking in saying, I'm interested in taking a look at what's going on here?
I've seen a couple, but that was earlier last week, and really I think that interest has waned.
Mm-hmm.
Inside, it's mainly attorneys, media, and campaign representatives. And it's interesting, most of the protesters outside have truly stayed outside. They're not interested in coming in, or they're not being let in to an extent. They've really just camped out and set up tents in the parking lot. So mm-hmm. that's very separate from what's going on inside.
And I guess they have a little more free rein to be on their bullhorns or with the music or whatever it is they need to be doing outside, right? You wouldn't be able to get away with that inside the canvassing office, I imagine.
Absolutely. You're correct. And there is a lot of country music and the Beatles outside particularly.
Interesting mix. Brenda Snipes, let's just come back to her for a moment, because she has become the face of this and obviously the butt of a lot of controversy, a lot of frustration from some folks. And you mentioned that a lot of it is bipartisan as well. Just quickly, what else can you tell us about Brenda Snipes that people might not be aware of? They haven't been following this supervisor elections before the last couple of weeks.
So one of the things that kind of led up to this election was our August primary. And the day after that election, several thousand vote-by-mail ballots were found uncounted in boxes the next day. And I think that really set a reputation that followed her into this election, this general election. And I think she's still dealing from just small mistakes in several past elections.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting to see now she really has to defend her being in this job and her competency. So I think it comes down to either the question of fraud, as, you know, Republican campaigns have been pushing that message, or incompetency. And Brenda Snipes is sitting somewhere in the middle trying to keep her reputation intact, but also her job.
Right.
She has said she's not planning she doesn't think she wants to seek re-election again in 2020.
Mm-hmm. And we should note, too, that although the notion of fraud, or at least the intimation of fraud, has been thrown around by some of the campaigns, we haven't actually seen any evidence of that or the official saying, yes, there is something fraudulent going on here, right?
No, we have not seen evidence of any true fraud. The Florida Department of Law Enforcement, FDLE, is saying that they don't really see a reason to investigate. And several judges in hearings for lawsuits so far have been asking certain campaigns to tone down their rhetoric as not to alarm voters of fraud that they just don't see exist.
Mm-hmm. Amy Green, is there any sign of Senator Bill Nelson, who is trailing in his re-election campaign, conceding this?
There is no sign of that. The Nelson campaign, on a conference call last night with reporters, said they are mobilizing some 30,000 volunteers to keep watch as this hand recount is underway. The Nelson campaign says they want to make sure every vote is counted. Of course, as Katie said, the Scott campaign says that the Nelson campaign is trying to kind of create votes out of thin air. They've raised these allegations of fraud, which have not been substantiated.
Mm-hmm. And what does this all mean, these lawsuits and everything? What does it all mean for the results of the election? When will we actually know who the winner is in these races?
Right. So the next deadline at this point is Sunday, and that's when official results are due from county canvassing boards. Theoretically, it could all be over on Tuesday. That's when elections are scheduled to be certified. Of course, there's all this litigation going on. But I think when it comes down to it, what it means is that Florida, this extremely important battleground state, the reason there is this attention on Florida is because Florida is so important in presidential elections and so important nationally. And what we're seeing in these recounts is that Florida is such a battleground state that there's just this vast divide. And so what we're left with is the question of what are we going to see in 2020? Because clearly Florida is not solidly Republican or Democrat.
Mm-hmm. Katie Swetelski, what's your sense about what happens after Tuesday? Do you think that's it, or is there going to be more work for you, and at least as far as these votes being counted and the election being finalized?
I think the election may be finalized, but I really think there's going to be a lot more work in the courtroom. I think that litigation is going to really take a while to show itself and be done, because it's many of the same exact attorneys from the 2000 presidential election versus Al Gore and George Bush. Mm-hmm. So it'll be really interesting to see how long this one stays in the court system.
Katie Swetelski is a reporter with WLRN in Miami. She's been covering the recount in Broward County. Katie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And we're also joined by 90.7's Amy Green following the lawsuits piling up in the race for Senate particularly. Thank you so much, Amy.
I'm happy to be here.
Still to come, where we are in the recount and what it means for the three statewide races. What has the last couple of weeks shown us about how Florida tallies its votes? Where does the Democratic Party of Florida go from here? What do Republicans take away from this midterm? We are back in a minute.
Hello, I'm Sean Burke. You know our silent drive is lagging a bit behind. We have a little over 50% left to raise by the end of the month. Now, that's not very far away. It's an ambitious goal, but together we can make it. Make your donation now. Visit WMFE.org or call 1-800-785-2020.
Support for 90.7 News comes from Amscott Financial, a state and federally regulated provider of financial services. Amscott Financial is a proud program sponsor of public radio on WMFE. More information is available online at amscottfinancial.com.
Hi, this is LaFontaine Oliver, president and general manager of 90.7 WMFE. We're nearing the end of our silent drive, and we're behind reaching our $300,000 goal. We cannot meet this goal without you. Please help by going to WMFE.org or call 1-800-785-2020. Thanks.
This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. With the machine recount in the rearview mirror, what's next in the race for Florida's governor, Senate, and agriculture commissioner? Republican Ron DeSantis, who looks set to be the next governor of Florida, released a statement inviting his Democratic rival Andrew Gillum to, quote, join me in the days ahead in a conversation about the future of our great state. Meanwhile, Gillum continues to call for every vote to be counted. So just how much work is there to do to bring the state together after this bruising election? And what about the election process itself? We're taking your calls and your comments and questions on Twitter. And that number is 1-866-338-5252. You can reach out to us on Twitter. We're at WMFE Orlando. I want to introduce the guest for the show. At this point in time, we're joined by Republican political analyst Frank Torres. Welcome back to Intersection, Frank.
Good morning.
Also joined by Democratic political analyst Jason Henry. Welcome back to you as well, Jason.
Hey, hey.
And with us from Stetson University, Chara Torres Spellacy. She is a professor of law, specialties including election law and constitutional law. Welcome, Chara.
Thank you for having me.
And as I said, you can make your calls at 1-866-338-5252. Share your questions and your comments online at WMFE. Orlando, Frank, I want to begin with you. The war of words over this election and the counting and the recounting has been pretty intense. Scott's campaign is keeping up the pressure on Bill Nelson to concede, saying the longer he holds on, the more damage he does to his legacy. Even Jeb Bush piling on that. What's the hurry for Scott?
You know, it's almost like the election never ended, really. I mean, these war words are going to continue until, you know, this thing is called. And it's all about posturing. I mean, if you're Bill Nelson, you know, you keep pushing forward. And if you're Rick Scott, you declare victory. And he's already in Washington, last time I checked. So, you know, it's all a matter of just, of presentation, appearances, and making sure that, you know, you show no signal of backing down, regardless of whether you're on the right side, recount or the wrong side of the recount.
This notion of the undervote, how much of a worry do you think that is for the Rick Scott campaign?
If the numbers were closer, I think it could be a significant worry for anybody who's up by these projections at this moment. But given the numbers we have so far, except in the Commission of Agriculture race, keep an eye on that one. That one is very, very fluid. I think right now both sides are comfortable, or at least in the Senate race, what the amount, the lead they have and the situations regarding the recount. So I think that's why we're hearing this, you know, this confident tone from Rick Scott.
Mm-hmm. Jason Henry, what's your take on this? What do you make of the Nelson versus Scott race?
I think that we saw this coming, right? Like, we knew this was going to be a razor-thin margin type of race even 2 years ago when Rick was kind of kicking around the idea. I think for Bill, he's walking a fine line, because what really messed him up was what happened in Broward County. If you look at the ballot design, mm-hmm. that race was right below the ballot instructions, and Broward County was advised, do not put any races below the ballot instructions, because voters tend to skip that race altogether. And Dr. Snipes did it anyway. And there were a lot of undervotes there. And potentially Bill lost a lot of votes with mm-hmm. That ballot design. So I understand that, you know, Dr. Snipes is a Democrat. It's a Democratic county. Bill doesn't want to pile on. But at this point, how can you not be angry?
Do you think there might be some conversations going on behind the scenes
there? I think so.
What about the lawyer that we're hearing from in the Nelson camp? Mm-hmm. Mark Elias, he's coming to fire, particularly from the GOP. What do you make of that kind of a line of attack?
Well, I mean, I think that you're talking about someone who has served the state of Florida for, 40 years now? Bill Nelson has a legacy that he's attempting to hold on to. And people on his side want to make sure that Bill either goes out gracefully or he wins. So in this case, he's being protected. And the type of rhetoric that's coming from both sides, I think, has been a little dangerous. It's not something that's been good for our democracy or for the body politic as a whole. But Bill, you just look at it this way. Bill has been a senator for a while. He served in Congress. He has served this state graciously and with a lot of, I was going to say charisma, but that's not something you necessarily attach to Senator Nelson. But he's been around so long that you want to make sure that at least people on his side want to make sure that he's protected and want to make sure that his legacy is protected. So I think that's why you're seeing such strong language coming out of that camp.
Mm-hmm. Chara Torres-Bellacy with Stetson University, I want to bring you into this conversation. We get a comment here from one of our listeners. Ildon says, signature matching is nonsense. You sign a thing to say you agree to it. It was never supposed to prove identity. Signature analysis is only supposed to come into play if you claim you did not sign a thing someone else claims you did, not if you claim you signed something. That's a little bit complicated, but some kind of thoughts on signature matching, because there has been a lot of attention on what that actually means or what it could mean for this election. What's your takeaway from the controversy over signatures being rejected and people having to come back and say, yes, I am this person, I did cast this ballot?
Yes. So Florida allows for vote by mail, and the voter is supposed to sign the outside of the envelope that they mail back to the state. And then when it's received by the state looks at the signature on the back of the envelope, they look at the signature that they have on file, and they try to match. The problem is this brings in some subjectivity on the part of the election official. Mm-hmm. And in some counties, they were bouncing, you know, around 2% of their ballots based on, quote, signature mismatch. Now, as someone who has a bizarre signature,
which I don't do exactly the same every time I sign it. It is my signature.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm a little bit more sensitive on this particular issue than others, but it does allow for some subjectivity in rejecting ballots. And because these elections are so close, that rejection of the signature match ballots could actually make a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a judge, Judge Walker, who has given Floridians who had their mail-in ballots bounced for signature match problems, they have until tomorrow to try to resolve that with the state so that their ballots will also be counted.
Mm-hmm. Mark Walker, speaking of this judge, he also made some comments in his ruling extending that or giving voters a little bit more time if their mail-in ballots were rejected for signature mismatch issues. He made some comments. He said in his ruling, quote, "We have been the laughingstock of the world election after election, and we chose not to fix this." It's pretty harsh. What do you think about that, Chara Torres-Spellacy? Is there some merit in what he says there?
Judge Walker is actually gaining a very interesting reputation as being a very pro-democracy judge and a pro-voter judge. He is the same judge who found the felony reenfranchisement system in Florida unconstitutional earlier this year. So I think he is used to making bold statements, and most of his bold statements are pro-voter.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. We're taking your calls, talking about the recount, this election. What was your experience of voting like? What questions do you have about the machine and manual recounts? Does this election give you confidence in the next one? Are you fired up about the politics and political engagement, or has the midterm election kind of made you want to switch off? The number is 1-866-338-5252. You can reach out to us on Twitter as well with your comments and questions at WMFE. Orlando. Chara Torres-Spellacy, if I could come back to you for a moment. I mean, as a professor who specializes in election law, just what has it been like to watch this election unfold the way it has in the last week to 10 days?
Wow. It's frustrating because there are certain things that Florida could have done months ago or even years ago that would have avoided some of the problems we're seeing. So one, you've already touched on, the ballot design issue. This is something that people have been talking about since 2000 and the butterfly ballot. Another thing that Florida could have done better is updated its equipment. I mean, it looks like Palm Beach and Broward County don't have the machines that they need to do recounts, which could happen in any election. And so I hope going forward that one of the things the counties and the state and even our good friends in Congress might think about is putting a little bit more investment into election infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess that could be something we'll see once the dust clears from this election. I want to bring you back into this conversation, Frank Torres. We have heard those insinuations of fraud from Rick Scott in this campaign, mirroring kind of what we're seeing from the president. As he's tweeting out about this, what do you make of that from Scott? Is it kind of a change of gear from the moderate-esque campaign that he ran?
You know, as soon as we entered recount territory, we were going to get those kind of accusations from both sides. And just backtrack for a second, we are the laughingstock election-wise for the country, and we have been for almost the last 19 years. We're punchlines on late-night comedy shows, and this is just the latest display that Florida can't get it right.
Is that fair, though? Because, I mean, there are 67 counties. There are a lot of election supervisors. I mean, every election supervisor or every election worker, at least, in all of the counties is working their tails off, right? We heard that from Broward County. And yet, some counties, you know, the problems, I feel like it might be casting an unfair light on the entire state.
I think it is unfair because here in the Tri-County area, Orange, Seminole, and Osceola, we're doing fine, you know? I mean, but because some people can't get their act together on the south side of the state, we get lumped in with the entire problem. And as far as, you know, your questions about elections reform and machines and things working, yeah, we need to get our act together. I mean, enough of this stuff. I mean, no matter what the results are, some side's going to feel like their votes truly didn't count. There's a problem there.
Mm-hmm. Getting a call in here from Julia. Julia, you're on the air. What are you thinking about as this election winds on?
Wonderful. I am thinking, why aren't our ballots, if they're rejected, automatically returned to sender? We mailed it to them. Why isn't it rejected and returned to sender so we know we weren't accepted?
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I can answer that, but let me throw that one to you, Chara Torres-Pellissey. What goes on when what actually happens when a mail-in ballot is rejected?
So I'm not sure if I have the answer for all 67 counties, but we know from former Congressman Murphy, who was one of these individuals who had their ballot rejected for signature mismatch, he actually got his ballot back. And that might have been because he voted particularly early. But he is now in that group of voters who get relief from Judge Walker's ruling. So he and other voters who have that signature mismatch have the opportunity to get that fixed by tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. And presumably voters whose ballot was rejected, they will be notified in some way, right?
I would think so.
Mm-hmm. There's mechanisms in place to notify voters. And as for the return of sender question, I mean, what are you going to do with a rejected ballot?
And I know, because I had to vote by mail this year. What happened for me, at least, is that I went to the SOE's website pretty much every day to make sure that it was accepted.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are a voter and you're curious as to if your signature was mismatched or, you know, if it was rejected, here in Orange County, at least, you can go to the website to track your vote by mail ballot to see if it was accepted or if there were any issues with it.
Mm-hmm. I guess you have to have a certain level of, internet savvy to do that.
I was going to say, that's kind of inside baseball, because a lot of people, you know, like election night, probably Frankie were probably the same way. I'm checking the SOE's website for returns.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty familiar with the website, but I think just for the regular voter, if you are doing vote by mail, you send it in and you think it's okay and you're not thinking, I need to go to the Supervisor of Elections website to check to make sure that my signature matches. That's not something that's on your mind. You're just automatically thinking that it's okay. And then, maybe you're watching the news one day and they're like, oh, maybe your signature didn't match. And you just so happen to go to the website and you find out it didn't match.
And I will say this. I mean, the Supervisor of Elections website, some of them probably could use a bit of an update.
Oh, absolutely. I think because you have a county like Orange, it's probably the same in Miami, Broward, some of the larger ones. But some of the smaller counties, it probably is a little bit of an issue to try to go to that county's website, maybe even a county like Bay County up in the Panhandle, or Liberty County, some of the smaller ones. It's probably a little bit of a problem to check that information.
And speaking of Bay County, we'll talk about those email ballots in a little bit. Julie, I wanted to just bring you back in, though. Did you vote by mail? Were you one of the people who had their ballots rejected? How was your experience of voting this year?
Okay, I did go on the website and I checked and I made sure my ballot was accepted, which was great. But I'm in Orange County, so it was a good website.
Mm-hmm.
But I did not mail them. I happened to see early voting, so the first day of early voting, I took mine and my husband's up there, and they put me straight to the front of the line, and I just basically handed it to the person, the official. And it turned out that we had forgotten to date our ballots, and I was thinking, good thing I went in, because then they let us go ahead and put a date on them. But, you know, would it have been rejected just for not having a date on it, I wonder?
I mean, there are myriad reasons why your ballot can be rejected. Chara, if you want to just weigh in real quick, and thank you so much for calling in with your question there. Chara, I mean, what are some of the reasons why your ballot might not be accepted? Is misdating it a reason for rejecting a ballot?
I guess potentially, and this gets to some of the subjectivity of the people who are accepting these ballots. And, you know, part of what they are trying to do is make sure, for example, that people don't vote twice.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to have someone vote by mail and then vote in person. And so that's part of what causes delay. They're trying to make sure that that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So if you actually tried to vote twice, they will reject that second ballot.
Mm-hmm. You listen to Intersection on 90.7 News with Chara Torres-Pellissey, professor of law at Stetson University, also joined by Jason Henry, Democratic political analyst, and Frank Torres, Democratic political analyst. Stay on the line, folks. We will be back after this break with more of the never-ending recount, it seems. You're listening to Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. We are talking recount. What's next for the candidates in the races subject to a statewide recount? What is your confidence level in the elections process in Florida? Is there still work to be done to change the way we vote? And what is it? We're back in a minute.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE. You know, public radio is a two-way street, paid for and maintained by the people who travel it. We need to raise over $150,000 by November 30th. Make your donation now. Visit WMFE.org or call 1-800-785-2020.
Support for 90.7 News comes from DeLand Fall Festival of the Arts, November 17th and 18th in historic downtown DeLand. Open to the public from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Find 175 juried artists, street performers, live music, hands-on art for kids, and more. Details on the festival and parking at DeLandFallFestival.com.
Hi, I'm Audie Cornish of NPR News. WMFE needs your help. Your support makes the work of WMFE possible. Consider giving what you can, whether that's $10 or $100. Make your gift of support at 1-800-785-2020 or give at WMFE.org. And thanks.
You're listening to Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. We are talking recount. We're taking your calls. We're joined by Chara Torres-Pellacy, Professor of Law at Stetson University, Jason Henry, Democratic political analyst, and my apologies to Frank Torres. I accidentally put him in the wrong party, so I guess you can reject my ballot for that, but he's a Republican political analyst. Any of you Republican listeners out there, please relax. He is still on your side. We're taking your calls. What was your experience of voting like? What questions do you have about the machine and manual recounts? Does this election give you confidence in the next one? And are you fired up about politics and political engagement, or has the midterm election kind of made you want to switch off? We're at 1-866-338-5252. Taking your questions and comments on Twitter as well, at WMFE Orlando. Chara, one of the issues that cropped up in this election was ballots that were emailed into the supervisor of elections in Bay County, which had been hit hard by Hurricane Michael. What is the problem with emailed ballots?
So the problem with emailed ballots is that Florida law does not allow for emailed ballots. This is a tough one for me from the point of view of wanting to, in all cases, be pro-voter. So in the panhandle, it was obviously devastated by the recent hurricane. And so I understand the instinct of that supervisor of elections trying to be as accommodating to those voters as possible. But there are specific regulations in Florida law that say that we do not accept emailed ballots, like, so full stop, mm-hmm. including for overseas military ballots. So interestingly, with the military ballots, you can request a ballot by email, but you cannot return a ballot by email as a military voter. Hmm. And that deadline is actually today. So all of the counts in all of the counties may change by a few votes as those overseas and military ballots come in today.
Mm-hmm. Frank Torres, we haven't heard a lot, I don't think, about this notion of ballots being mailed into Bay County from folks on the Republican side who are running for election. Why is that?
I think because there's a portion of the electorate which favors Republicans. I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that those voters are going to vote that way. Mm-hmm. But right now, I mean, as far as the grand scheme of the state, right now all eyes are on Palm Beach and Broward counties. Mm-hmm. I mean, the rest is going to be just another block or another part of the overall equation which leads to victory. So I think that's probably why we haven't heard that much about it. I mean, all eyes are focused down south and about ending this thing, you know, as quickly and as cleanly as possible.
Speaking of that, Jason Henry, we are hearing from Andrew Gillum. He's been, I guess the margin of votes between him and his opponent, Republican Ron DeSantis, hasn't really changed much. Mm-hmm. So it looks like Ron DeSantis will be the next governor of Florida. But Gillum is kind of holding on and saying, look, let's just count every vote. What do you take away from that message? Is it just him sort of trying to shore up his base and saying, look, all the efforts leading up to this election were not in vain?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we learned about Andrew, even during the primary, is that he's a fighter. Mm-hmm. If you remember, he was down in the polls. Gwen Graham was going to bring it home, so to speak. Philip Levine was going to beat him. He was running third, maybe fourth in some of the polls. Then he shocked everybody and won the primary. And for this one, this was such a hard-fought race for both sides, for DeSantis and for Gillum. And for Gillum, he in my opinion, at least, he wants to ensure that folks who supported him, his base, he wants to let them know he's not giving up on them, mm-hmm. and that even though he may lose, because he did say that, you know, he'll accept whatever outcome may be. So even if the recount doesn't come in his favor, it's a way for him to prove that, you know, I'm going to fight until the very end, and I'm going to do this for you, even if he loses.
Mm-hmm. I want to get a call in now. We've got Pete with a question or a comment. Pete, what is your comment there?
I went up, I had a mail-in ballot, and it got messed up with all the amendments. So I went up to the voting, early voting, took my mail-in ballot, and they said, no problem. I gave them my driver's license with my photo ID, my voter's registration card, mm-hmm. and they gave me another ballot and took my old one. But then they had me sign an iPad or whatever it is, and I asked for a stylus so I could do my signature the way I normally do. And they said, oh, well, all our stylists have rubber tips, and they snag, and it'll be a bad signature. So you have to use your finger. Now, I'm one that I'm old, and I don't like doing this sign with your finger because it never looks right. But when I was at the DMV, they had styluses that worked, and I'm kind of curious of, one, why do I have to sign mm-hmm. when I'm presenting myself and my IDs and all that? And two, why don't they get the stylus that the DMV has?
Mm-hmm. Pete, thanks for your question. I'm sort of hearing a couple of things there. And Char, I want to bring you back into this because we were chatting yesterday before the show, and you were saying one of the issues is kind of thinking about where we go from here as far as equipment goes. What do you take away from our caller's comment there about having to use the iPad to sign and not having the right equipment? And I guess this kind of goes to your comment about the signature too, right? People have issues with their signatures because nobody signs exactly the same every day.
Yeah. I mean, I would hope that one of the things we think about is poll worker training. And I think if we're going to match most signatures under the motor voter bill to the signature that you have made at the DMV, then the technology that the elections officials use should more closely match the technology that the DMV uses, mm-hmm. so that you don't end up bouncing so many people for signature match problems. Because remember, everyone who has a mail-in ballot, they were mailed that by their supervisor of elections, which means at least the day that they were mailed that ballot, the supervisor of elections has deemed that person to be a real voter, a real right. registered voter. Mm-hmm. And so it's in some ways a little bit frustrating to then have that person who fills out their ballot, sends it in, has remembered to sign it. We haven't even thought about the people who just, you know, through either carelessness or they just skip it, mm-hmm. they don't sign it. So they've actually bothered to sign it. And then to have their ballots rejected because someone subjectively thinks this signature is not the same as that other signature, when it really is from the same person and the same voter and they're trying to comply with the law. I think we need to err on the side of allowing those votes to count.
Mm-hmm. I want to get a question in here from Twitter as well. We have B Doc asking, what is the ballot design process and how are they approved? I'm not sure if you have some thoughts on that, Jason Henry. Do you know sort of what goes into the ballot design and how that kind of gets all squared away?
Yeah, from my understanding, it's independent of the supervisor of election. Like I said, Dr. Snipes received guidance mm-hmm. as to how they should be designed, for efficiency for the voter, but she had her own, or her and her team had their own design in mind, and they decided to put the Senate race right below the ballot instructions. And same could be said for Orange County. I mean, and plus these ballots are so long. Like mm-hmm. they are so long. We
agreed.
Had so many amendments and all these different races that sometimes I think voters even get fatigued. You're having to read through all these different things. And I mean, I'm sure there's a better way that we could design them or even write them so that, you know, we're not running into issues like this again in 2 to 4 years to where we're either talking about ballot design or undervotes or overvotes. But to your original question, I think it is independent upon the supervisor of elections. And also to that other caller, you have to sign an affidavit basically to surrender your absentee ballot when you are turning it in to go early vote. So he mm-hmm. would have to sign something if you are surrendering your absentee.
Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, though, obviously some frustrations, as Shara pointed out, that if you were the right person to send the ballot to, then surely you should be the right person to return it as well.
Absolutely.
One more question, comment rather, from a caller here, Pam. Pam, you're on the air.
Yes, I am a Florida voter, and I have been for many years. I also have a tremor. So it has gotten worse over the years. So a few years ago, I went to vote, and my signature did not match. So they said, we don't know if this vote, if your vote's going to count. But would you like to sit down here and try to make your signature look like the one we have on record? So I tried.
Mm-hmm.
And when I left, I was very upset. I said, how am I going to make sure my vote counted? And they gave me some information about how to do that. Now, it's been several years, so I don't even remember, and I don't remember if I did it. But they didn't take into account that I had a tremor.
Mm-hmm.
Or they didn't, you know. It was not. It was very uncomfortable.
What about this year? Did you have any issues this year with voting?
No, they took me right in. My signature was just real wobbly and scratchy, and they just come on and go ahead.
Mm-hmm. So I guess it kind of depends on who you get as your the person who takes that signature down. Pam, thank you so much for your call. Shara, I mean, it just sounds like there are so many issues with signatures. I wonder if there are other states which have kind of looked at another way of identifying somebody and making sure people are, you know, who they say they are at the voting booth.
So I did look into this, and sadly, for all of us who are worried about the signature problem, that's the norm. And even states like Oregon, which they do all of their voting by mail, what they do is they have the ability to cure. So if you send in a Oregon ballot and your signature doesn't match, they notify you, and then you have several days to try to resolve that with the state, mm-hmm. which might bode well in Florida as well. We had a very tight original deadline for people to resolve signature match issues. And I think that's why it's very important that Judge Walker extended that deadline to tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a signature match problem, I encourage you, Florida voters, please try to get it resolved, because this is one of those three super close elections where your vote really matters. And depending on how many people resolve their signatures, that could be the margin in the race for U.S. Senate, for example, or mm-hmm. Commissioner of Agriculture.
Jason Henry, in the final minutes or so we have here, what do you think kind of happens next as far as engagement and keeping that enthusiasm going? And because that is, I guess, one of the positive things to come out of the election is that the turnout was high, mm-hmm. people were motivated ahead of it. Do you see that sort of fading away before 2020?
Not in Florida. Every 2 to 4 years, it seems like we're setting turnout records. I know that this midterm was a little bit different just because some people viewed it as a repudiation of President Trump. Others were really, really, really engaged with Gillum because he was kind of a once in a generation candidate, at least for Florida. In 2 years, we'll see who's on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Usually that's what drives turnout. So if you have turnout, I should say, or turnout. But if you have a candidate who excites your base, who is exciting for both sides, then I think, you'll see a lot of people come out. But if you have someone who's kind of milquetoast, then you'll see turnout kind of depressed.
Is this a big question that the Democratic Party of Florida has to answer in the
next
2 years?
You know, I think that outside of Obama, when's the last time a Democrat has actually won this state? Clinton maybe back in 92.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're talking about Florida being a swing state that's not really a swing state. Republicans have owned this state for, it seems like, decades now, and you're looking for Democrats to come and kind of break that mold.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew had the momentum, it seemed, and the energy, and it didn't work. So in 2 years, we'll be talking about Florida being a swing state and can a Democrat win? Well, can a conservative or a Republican lose, I think, is the question.
Mm-hmm. Frank Torres, all the kind of voting issues aside, and given that the election isn't quite finished yet, but will be fairly soon, I think a lot of people are hoping. What's your kind of takeaway from this point of view? Was it a blue wave? Was it a red wall? What happened there?
You know, it really depends on where you look at the state. Overall, I wouldn't say it was a blue wave. Democrats did make some big gains here in Central Florida, but they were shut out in other parts of the state. So I think we had a mixed bag election when you take in to account the entire election. But from the top of the ballot, you look at the governors and the Senate race, the big races and the cabinet races, there was no blue wave.
Mm-hmm. What would your advice be to Florida Democrats going forward?
My advice to Florida Democrats? Well, you know, I mean, I think Andrew Gillum was moving too fast for you. Mm-hmm. I think if Gwen Graham was the nominee, she might have had a little bit more luck. I think you just have to try to find the right balance, and you're going to have more to work with Donald Trump on the ballot in a couple of years. It's going to be really exciting to watch.
And real quick, in final seconds here, what is the future, or who is the future of the Republican Party?
That is a fine question. Depends who you ask. But as for this week, it's probably Ron DeSantis. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Frank Torres is a Republican political analyst. Thank you so much for joining us on Intersection.
Thank you so much. Go Knights.
We're also joined by Jason Henry, Democratic political analyst. Feel free to throw on your football team.
Go Tigers.
Okay.
LSU.
And Chara Torres-Spellacy, professor of law at Stetson University. Thank you as well.
Go Hatters.
All right. There we go. We've got the roundup there. Thank you all. Support for Intersection comes from Florida Hospital and from our listeners. Intersection's producer is Brendan Byrne. Our intern is Shania Richburg. Production assistance for this week's show from Amy Green and Danielle Pryor and Juan Gualda. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.